This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
I'm Brina Guerin, and you're listening to Hex Positive. You're listening to the Stardust Sessions with Lozzie Stardust and Brina Guerin. Welcome, witches, to another episode of the Stardust Sessions. I'm Brina Guerin, and as you know, this is a Patreon-exclusive series where I, along with my good buddy and favorite horrible goose witch, Lozzie Stardust, have banterous chats about history and witchcraft and all of the interesting places where they intersect. And we're back for part three of our dive into the life and deeds of King James. Hello, Lozzie!
Hello, Poppet.
Hello, Poppet. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready.
So many notes for this one. Oh, my gosh. Oh, we're going to be throwing some vocabulary at y'all this time. And a number of documents and texts. And I'll try and link as many of them in the show notes as I possibly can, and as many, like, here, go and find information hereabouts. And we will have, like, a small bibliography of some of the books that we found that cover some of these various topics. But the really good news is that most of the things that we are about to talk about are also in the public domain. You can find them online. You just have to look up the titles. So yes. There's that. We covered Jimmy's youth, his rise to kingship in Scotland and England, and his involvement with the North Berwick witch trials. And today we're going to wrap things up with the literary works of King James and a brief discussion of the impact they have had, which is considerable.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We're gonna text you up. Sorry.
Nice. Very nice. There is a little bit of a preface, just sort of set up where we were sort of in literary history and like where popular opinion as well as like religious authority opinion was at this time, and also where the law settled at this time and all of this sort of influenced James's writings on the topic of witchcraft, which of course we're going to talk about demonology. And I did cover a lot of this in episode 20 of the main show of Hex Positive, talking about witchcraft and the law. So we've got just a couple of things. 1584, we have the papal bull Summus Desiderantes Effectibus, which basically was giving certain inquisitors in Germany carte blanche to do whatever they pleased to root out and punish suspected witches in the areas where they had jurisdiction. This will later have an impact when Heinrich Kramer,
boo,
publishes the Malleus Maleficarum in 1486, which includes this papal bull from Pope Innocent VIII. Also, boo. You know, it is later denounced as just repeating popular superstition by the church. However, you know, it does take hold in the popular consciousness and does have a great effect on James's own imagination. In 1563, we have Lizzie's laws about witchcraft, an act against conjurations, enchantments, and witchcrafts, a statute basically ordering capital punishment for convicted witchcraft. This is the death penalty in cases where provable harm had occurred or where treason had been committed. If it's mischief or if it's your first time and like nothing real bad has happened, you're just going to go to prison for a year. But if you're convicted a second time, no matter what it was, off to the gallows you go.
Yeah.
And that sort of laid down like the first, not the first law about witchcraft in England, certainly not. But it was, the one that James was working from, at the start of his reign in England, directly after Elizabeth the First. And it's also, and this is important for when we get into the biblical writing, this is when accusation of witchcraft begins to be conflated with accusations of poisoning in England. You know, the subject has obviously been raised before then, but this is where like the two sort of become really inextricably intertwined. And it also, part of the statute is that it makes maleficium a felony, removing jurisdictions from ecclesiastical courts to secular ones. Yeah. And similar laws are passed in Scotland around the same time, which would have been Jamesy Boy. Yeah. So, 1584, Sir Reginald Scott publishes his skeptical expose, The Discovery of Witchcraft, which basically says, this is all superstition. You really need to learn to like discern between stage illusions and rural superstitions and people gossiping about, you know, things they don't understand, and actual harm being done. So this is one of the books and one of the texts at the time that was James wrote sort of a rebuttal to when he published Daemonology. And it was actually rumored that when he came to the throne in 1603, he had his agents get every copy of A Discovery of Witchcraft that they could get their hands on and burn them. Because the book was so controversial and so counter to his own views and what he wanted to put forth in the populace. So there is that. Highly recommend tracking it down.
Yeah, because if it doesn't exist, if we set it on fire, it no longer exists.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like, yeah, this is so counter to what I believe as king. And because part of it also is like, you know, part of one of the things that that Scott put forward is, hey, sometimes bad shit just happens and we need to get over that rather than accusing our neighbors of causing storms and sickening cattle and such like. And of course, that did not sit well with James, who, you know, based part of his career as king on, you know, hunting down witches for causing a storm, as we discussed in our last episode. So then, of course, 1590 to 1592-ish was the North Berwick trials, which were just a whole god-awful mess, which he references. He references a number of the things that people confessed to during the trials in Daemonology, and just cites it as, well, they confessed to it. Therefore, you know, it must be so. Yes,
it happened. They said it, so therefore it must be right, 120%, right? It definitely wasn't, because they would have just admitted to anything because it was under torture. Oh, no.
Of course not. Nope. Yes. So 1604, he puts his own new witchcraft act into place shortly after being crowned, an act against conjuration, witchcraft, and dealing with evil and wicked spirits. And this broadens the previous act to include the use of familiars and the conjuration with and consorting with evil spirits in the definition of witchcraft. And this is where, you know, this idea of familiars really becomes sort of cemented in the English definition of, you know, what witches are and what witches do. It's, oh, they fly to these meetings with the devil, and they, you know, they create storms and, you know, blast the crops, but also all of them have familiars, and that becomes like sort of the trademark TMTM thing in England. Yes. They really have a fixation on familiars in trials going forward, that you don't see elsewhere.
And then Hopkins carried it on, and he was just like, yep. Well, yes. You know, Jimmy wrote it down, so it must be true. And it's like, dude, a lot of time has passed. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Mm-hmm. King wrote it. 100% legit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and demonology will go on to have a profound effect on people like Matthew Hopkins, who are out there, you know, basically hunting down supposed witches for money. So that is his, one mm-hmm. of the first and most lamentable effects of his work. But before he published demonology, he had published this little thing called The True Law of Free Monarchies. And that was in the 1570s, I want to say. And it's a little tract, setting forth his idea of what it meant to be king. It's basically establishing himself, saying is, yes, I fully believe in the, divine right of kings, sort of as an extension of when the Pope gets the job, apostolic succession. Yeah, that's the one. Where it's like, yes, it's a divinely chosen line of people who are meant to rule. I am part of that line, and therefore, you know, no one can speak against me, because then they are speaking against God, because I have been ordained by God. And this was a bit contrary to some ideas that were out at the time, where, you know, some folks were saying, you know, actually, it is a little bit government by consent of the governed. There's a little bit of a social contract there saying that, yes, if you are appointed to rule, then you have a responsibility to the people, and you are there because they are the legs you stand on. And he went, nope, I'm here because of God. And that's it. Nana nana boo boo.
Yep.
Yep. He later also publishes in 1599 the Basilikon Doron, which means royal gift in Greek. Yeah.
And so, sorry, I couldn't keep that sigh in, because I was just like,
yeah, and it really is. It's another thing of basically how to be a good king. Although by that time he actually like had his head on straight a little more, and you know, he did include more ideas of, you know, yes, once you're king, yes, you are appointed by God, but you also have a responsibility to mete out, you know, justice fairly, and it's important to be godly and take care of things, but also further the interests of the church as well as the kingdom. And it goes into detail. It goes into a lot of detail, stuff about, you know, how to run one's royal household, how to choose a wife, how to conduct oneself during daily life and during wartime and during speeches and one's personal appearance and grooming. And Yeah, it's very, very thorough. It's very interesting, and it was written in the form of a letter to his eldest son, Henry, yeah. Duke of Rothesay, who unfortunately never did become king. He died in 1612, upon which James gave it to his second son, Charles, who later became yeah. King Charles the yeah. First. So he had basically this how-to pamphlet from his dad on how to be king.
Yep. With his brother's name written at the top, and it's like, oh.
Awkward.
Awkward. I'm just going to cross out Henry's name and just write Charlie at the top, and it's just like, ugh.
Chucky boy, here's how we yep. do it. This says Jimmy yep. the Second. Oh, no, never mind.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. So, you know, they do say, we did say initially, you know, James did have this this nickname of being, you know, the wisest fool in Christendom, because yeah. he was taken in by a number of, you know, very like sort of superstitious beliefs of the day. But he also was an incredibly well-educated man, like not even yeah. like, oh, for the times, it's just all around. He was very well-educated. He was curious. He was well-read. He enjoyed reading. He had an interest in literature and the arts, and was a noted patron of a number of writers and playwrights, as we'll get to. So, you know, yes, he was taken in by some stuff because of his personal beliefs, but, you know, this is by no means a stupid or uneducated person. He just happened to have some unfortunate beliefs that were
taken advantage sort of, really.
He's sort of taken advantage of, for sure, but also things that were sort of impressed on him from a very early age,
yeah.
Most especially that, you know, you are God's special boy, and,
yep.
you know, as such, you know, you have this divine right to basically do what you please, and your word should therefore be law. So, yeah,
yep.
it's all a bit mad. But also just like this is a fellow who, you know, he sits and thinks about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And extra thinking means extra, yeah.
Yes.
Heart knowledge is dangerous, as it were.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to Daemonology, 1597. At this point, he was still King James the Sixth of Scotland. He was
yes.
not yet James the First of England. And this is not atypical of other things that were written at the time on the subjects of witchcraft and, you know, necromancy and demonolatry and all of that stuff. So it's put out as a pamphlet, but it also is rather long.
It's a pamphlet into like three parts, you know,
mm-hmm.
it is divided. I mean, its full title is
yeah.
just hilarious. It's like Daemonology, in form of a dialogue divided into three books by the high and mighty King James.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, man, it sounds like a Fallout Boy album. Like,
yeah,
it's just like, oh, yeah.
Actually, I feel like
divided into three books.
I feel like Daemonology in the form of a dialogue would make a great Fallout Boy song.
Yep, yep,
it would.
Yep.
It absolutely
yep.
would. That'd be
yep.
fun. Written by the high and mighty Prince James, by the grace of God, King of England, Scotland, France, and Ireland, Defender of the Faith. TM, TM, TM.
It just went on. It just went
mm-hmm.
on, and it just yeah.
Yeah.
Just,
well, that's the 1603 yeah. printing, but yeah.
Yeah. The OG printing. And then yeah, that was it. So he was just like, right, okay. So my first printing was the first one that I said.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, oh wait, I'm King of England now. I've gotta add
Oh yeah,
extra.
And it was
yeah.
in print for a good while.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was yep.
It was very, very popular. And not just because the king had written it. You know, people loved to read scary stories back then. And, you know, they had all these, you know, books and pamphlets and such about, you know, all these sensational things about witch trials and things that people were doing. And, this became one of them. And, you know, when we say pamphlet these days, we think of like a brochure, but back then a pamphlet was just a small book.
Yeah. It was like an A5 book. It wasn't, it wasn't like a tiny, like, oh, you know, I'm going to, you know, pick up this like little kind of A4 divided into three bits kind of thing about where I should go or some ideas or something. Yeah. It was heavily, heavily, basically like a mini book or a novel. It just wasn't hardbound, really.
Yeah. And he does include, like I said, a lot of things from the North Berwick trials in the pamphlet, including some of the like actual like news of the trials and some stuff that had been published regarding the trials. Yeah. The actual like text of those pamphlets was included in Demonology. And he goes like right for the jugular in the opening lines of the book.
Yep.
He tells you what he's on about. The fearful abounding at this time in this country of these detestable slaves of the devil, the witches or enchanters, hath moved me, beloved reader, to dispatch in post this following treatise of mine to resolve the doubting, both that such assaults of Satan are most certainly practiced, and that the instrument thereof merits most severely to be punished. So he's basically putting out this whole thing saying, you know, yes, we absolutely should have all of these witch hunts, you know, ignore what these other blokes are saying about, you know,
witches don't exist.
Yeah. Trying to be, you know, trying to moderate things or have, you know, skepticism or whatever. No, this crap happens. I watched it happen in North Berwick and here's the deal. And also I'm king.
Yeah.
Yes.
So listen to what I've got to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was very heavily influenced by other works that had, like, predated it.
And he directly rebuts claims in books like Scott's Discovery of Witches. He cites them in the text and then goes, no. And yeah. And the whole thing is set up as a Socratic argument between. Between two people who are named, I didn't write down what the names were, but they're Greek.
They are. It is. I just wrote Phil. I'm so terrible. I wrote Phil and Effie.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, I wrote it down. It was
we can say Phil and Effie.
Yeah. It's Phil all and good. Effie.
Yeah.
Just, yep. And it's just, it is just an absolute like.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah.
Oh, I got it. Philomathes, who is taking a philosophical stance on the legal aspects of things, but is trying to gain more knowledge from the character of Epistemon, who is the person who is seeking for King James. And this is. It has to do with, you know, stuff that ties into like Socratic arguments and the Socratic method, which we're not going to get into because it's a whole daily jobby, but it is a thing. Yeah. Feel free to look it up if you really want to do your head in. But yes, again, something that's not uncommon as a literary device back in the day, framed as a debate between two characters, because it's a way of putting forth, you know, well, this is the argument, aha, but this is my response to.
This is my counterpoint. This is my.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's there has been a translated TM version. A copy has been translated, as it were, and it's published by Llewellyn, of all people, actually, which was quite a surprise when I was looking that up. I was like, okay, fair dues. That's a bold move for the kind of pagan publishing house to publish Demonology.
Yes, and I will link that in the notes. That is one of the things that I kind of popped aside as, ooh, further reading suggested. Here you go, this one.
Yeah, because it's a lot easier to, I mean, obviously it comes with a caveat that somebody of a paganish persuasion will have translated it or kind of put it into modern speak. But I would love to do a reinterpretation sometime. Because, yeah, it's things like, you know, the first chapter is something to like an argument of existence of some beliefs of the time that, you know, witches didn't actually exist. And it's a whole conversation between Phil and Epi about kind of like, you know, Phil's like, yo, do witches exist? Change my mind. And Epi's just like, yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And like Epi's like, it totally is apparent. Look at all this, you know, look at Saul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels just like, is it though? It's just like, and Epi's like, yeah, here are some Bible facts.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Here are some Bible facts. And just
foreshadowing.
And it just, there's some of the things that I've kind of like reading it through. It was like, I don't have time to explain this to you. I think it was in like, I can't remember. I think it was in like in chapter 4. And, you know, Phil's just like, oh, but what about astrology? Because that's maths, right?
Mm-hmm. And math, you know, is clearly evil.
Math is clearly okay. You know what, you know, chapter 2 was like, okay, what is actually sin? Chapter 3 is like, look, explain magic to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the difference between magic and necromancy? And, you know, Phil's just like, come on, bloody prove it. Mm-hmm. And it basically came down to, oh, it's okay, because it's fine learning about it. You can educate yourself about it.
As long as you just can't do it. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like astrology. It's just like, yes, and that is, but that's okay, because you're rich and you're white and you're male. And there, and it's basically, it is maths as long as you don't use it for divination purposes. So using the stars to plot a course to go to sea, like navally, is fine to use it at maths. But if you try and use it to define the future, it's, you know, it's witchcraft. It's bad. You know, and it's just, there's a few times that, Epi's just like, yeah, basically his one of the end of his arguments is, so basically I haven't got all day to explain this to you, so you should just go ahead and do your own research. And I was just like, is that 1600s equivalent of go do your own research, because I haven't got time to like explain this to you. I can't. Yeah, it's like the, oh, this is, you know, this argument, we're having this. I don't have, you know, I don't have time to go through all this with you. And there's a couple of times he's just like, oh, well, you know, well, clearly, it's in the scripture about soul. Like, you know, there's one bit where he's just like, oh, do witches even exist? Because that's what Scott had written about, hadn't he? He was like, witches though. And then as an absolute rebuttal, he was just like, well clearly witches exist, because, you know, Saul,
they're in the Bible.
Exodus, is it? Yeah, it's in the Bible. In Exodus, Saul goes up to some witches and it's just like, yo, what's the future? How do I maintain my kingly McKingness? And that was like, yeah, that was the problem. So yeah. Better not call Saul, really, but it was just like, but just one of my notes is, so Epi mate, witches sus.
Yes.
Now, mate, it's well apparent. Phil, is it though? Epi, here's a Bible fact. I don't have time to go through this with you. Do your own research, TM. And it is just an absolute back and forth of everything. And the amount that Phil has any counterpoints, there's just acceptance of what Epi's just said. Because, you know, like, he'll go on this massive, like, 3-page rant about, these are the Bible facts! And then Phil doesn't get any rebuttal back. Mm-hmm. He's just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is fine. So there's no
It is very like, ah, rebuttal one. Here are all the ways in which you're wrong. There is no rebuttal two. That's the next chapter, but we're just going to gloss. We're going to absolutely gloss over it. And it's just... it makes very interesting reading, but I had to read it.
It does. Like, it's a bit dense, but it makes for interesting reading. And it records a lot of the, as Scott's work did, it records a lot of the superstitions of the day. And like what constitutes witchcraft and what do witches actually do, you know, what are their aims, that sort of thing. Because it's for some, it was a little nebulous and, you know, also he's, you know, setting in sort of, in legal terms and also in terms of belief and, you know, like ecclesiastical belief and also common belief. It's like, this is what witches do. Yes, they exist. These are their aims. They're wholly evil and they're in league with the devil and they're trying to, you know, bring down good people. And the purpose of all of, you know, all of this, of us, you know, talking about this evil, evil subject and these evil, evil people is to educate people so they can better defend themselves. Yeah. And yes, and the there's also like a very important discussion on the difference between Christian miracles and things that appear miraculous but are actually, you know, caused by the devil, things that are the result of witchcraft and, you know, so on and so forth. And the conclusion of the whole thing is that James says demons are under the direct supervision of God, unable to act without his permission, and they are used as sort of a corrective device for people to show people the error of their ways. So he basically says God allows this evil to exist in order to test us and in order for us to become more godly. We see these evils so that, you know, we can be tested, and passing the test means rooting them out and denying these bad things and getting rid of the people who fall for these tricks. Which is basically just more justification for the witch trials, because some people had come forward and said, it's a bit excessive. And he's like, no, it wasn't. I was clearly doing God's work. Clearly. Not just because I am king, but also because I am king.
And they're just like, okay, so what actually are these? And they're just like, yes, you know, the second part is like, right, well, this is what an incubus is and this is what a succubus is. And it's just like, dude, you got really into describing some of this, like
and that's also where the descriptions from the North Berwick trials come in. Yeah. He's like, you know, not just all this stuff that is in the Bible and whatnot, you know, here's things that just happened. Clearly, you know, this is proof because, you know, it just happened. These people confessed to it. Sure, it was under torture, but, you know, we'll just gloss over that. And yeah. And he also includes fairies.
Yes, he does.
In you know, things that are demonic and in league with the devil and witchcraft, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people kind of screamed at, because it was like, oh, wait a minute, this is our, you know, country folklore that what do you mean this is evil now? Fine.
And also, do you really want to pick on the Fae Queen? Because like,
no.
It's just like, okay, you know, and basically Phil's just like, but what makes them different? You know, what is them? Because you've said all about these previous kind of like four chapters in the second half of the book, like, but what makes them so different? And he's just like, they're not, they're just those because they are deceiving you and leading you astray.
It's like, yes, and that's a big part of it, is that, you know, at least that's one thing where he agrees with some of the pieces that he was rebutting, is that some people are just deceived into thinking that these things are happening But that in itself is an evil because they're being led astray and they're believing in things that are not godly.
Yeah, because it is these things that are outside, you know, people wouldn't even say the Fae. They'd call them things like our good neighbours. And, you know,
the hill folk.
The hill folk or the fair ones.
The wee peoples, yes.
The wee peoples, yeah. And it's just, he does at least go on to say, oh, well, you know, we're not going to punish people. We shouldn't really punish people who the Fae kind of present themselves to or fairies present themselves to. But it's, they should be pitied.
They should be pitied. They have been led astray.
But if they start convening with them, you know, because Satan, Beelzebub and Lucifer are three different, according to him.
They got very, very into, like, naming various demons and saying, like, what they did and, like, how many legions they had and what they presided over. And it was, it's a whole thing. The Key of Solomon is a fascinating piece. Whether it has fuck all to do with King Solomon in actuality is a completely different subject.
Yep.
But that's demonology in a nutshell. And he included, the News of Scotland pamphlet with all of his arguments, which describes, you know, the trial of various people in the North Berwick trials, most notably Dr. Fian. And it heavily inspired a number of people who came later, including, unfortunately, that fucker, Matthew Hopkins.
We all know how I feel about him.
He directly cited demonology as his inspiration and his resource for creating methods for discovering witches in his own book that he published, which was also called The Discovery of Witches, which is very confusing
because if you Google that, then that you're actually going, no, you're not going to get Scott's version, you're going to get Hopkins's version first,
or the modern novel.
Yes. I haven't read those. I've watched the TV show, but
I haven't really got too far into either, but as I understand it, part of the story involves time travel and literally deals with the North Berwick witch trials.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so it's like a thing.
Yep. It is a whole thing, TM. Excellent.
Certainly a whole thing, and it's very involved and complicated, and one of these days I am going to finish it, so no one spoil it for me.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't message us with spoilers. We'll get round to it eventually.
Yes. Getting round to it. But yes, so that's demonology in a nutshell. It's King James printing his own ideas about witchcraft and his own experiences with the North Berwick trials, and also a lot of sort of notable superstitions of the day, and just reporting all of this as fact. Something one might add that was later done by one Margaret Murray.
Yeah.
When reporting on the supposed history of the Great White Western Witch Cult. Unfortunately, it also creates a precedent for that.
Yep.
And but that is time, something we will get to her ass one day.
Yep. It's just the burning time myth, and it's just an absolute nightmare.
Yes. Yeah. So this helps to create that. Yeah.
And it does stoke. Yeah. It absolutely stokes it, because News from Scotland, which was added on the end, like you said earlier, poor Dr. Fian, it was just like, it just absolutely added to everything.
It literally stoked the fire.
Yes. And Richard Bernard's 1629.
There we go.
Guide to Grand Jurymen, which was actually how you do a judicial trial. And it's like, Let's not take witch trials as actual trials, please, people. But nope. 1629.
Yep. Because of that Elizabethan law, you know, now it is in the hands of secular courts and not ecclesiastical ones. Not sure if that really was any better because, you know, at least with ecclesiastical courts, you know, you eventually had the chance to appeal to a secular court and be like, listen, this is all based on, you know, church stuff and I want to be tried by the actual law. You know, if it's a secular court, then the actual law is going, nah, mate, you're fucked.
Yep.
Yeah.
No.
Because that was a lot harder to, you had fewer, you know, options. You were really kind of fucked either way, but
it's just a different kind. Yeah. And it just really, and after the gunpowder plot of 1604, that really, because there was almost this, oh, you know, you're just paranoid, but you know, oh, well, sir, maybe people aren't really out to get you that much. And then after Guy Fawkes tries to blow him up, it's like, no, it wasn't witches, it was Catholics, but you know, there's definitely still people out to get me. So therefore.
So we're going to get them too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We're just going to lump all of them together.
Yep. And there are, you know, this is like post-demonology, but there are things that get added to the laws that sort of conflate certain, like Catholic goings on with witchcraft and so on. And there's a whole thing about, you know, having like images and speaking in tongues or speaking in Latin or using the old verses and, you know, relying on like papist superstition, and that becomes very much lumped in with demonolatry in a way because, you know, it's, oh, Catholics still believe in demons. It must mean that they consort with them, question mark.
Can't be having secret masses and going off and doing your own secret Bible study. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not that. It's definitely
witchcraft. And it's just like, okay. Yeah, definitely not just Catholics who have felt so persecuted that they're doing either it's young women's courting men or they're going off to kind of secret Catholic mass that they were like holding in other people's houses and stuff, and it's just like, okay, is what's easier for me to confess and get away with, being a Catholic or being a witch?
Six to one, half dozen to the other. Either way, you're probably gonna hang,
but at least with the witchcraft, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. Only they hung. Whereas if you confessed to being a Catholic, then the man of the house would have known what was going on, and therefore he must be Catholic too. So there was like familial preservation involved in that as well.
Yeah. And a lot of time they lumped charges of witchcraft and heresy kind of together because, you know, in their mind, it went hand in hand. If you're committing heresy, then you must also be, you know, doing all this
treasonous stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Heresy detected. Boop, boop, boop. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, as my listeners may recall, a lot of witchcraft accusations that we look at that were, you know, these witch trials, it all started with like charges of heresy. Yeah. And of course, you know, once Jimmy Boy gets into the game, heresy is also treason.
Yes.
So there's that. And that was a lot harder to like wiggle out of. And
it's okay, because if you rewrite the Bible.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which.
You rewrite the Bible to suit what you want.
Oh, it's okay. I was just coming up to that. You were saying 1604, same year as the gunpowder plot. Jimmy convenes the Hampton Court Conference and orders a new English Bible because, and this is important, there was a Puritan translation that had existed before, and he had got hold of it and was just basically like, oh no, this won't do at all. Nope. This is not in line with, you know, with my beliefs about how we should be doing things. The Puritans are much too stiff, and much too, superstitious. about certain things. Therefore, we need a new English translation of the Bible, an official one that will be, you know, ordered by the king and approved by me, the wisest fool in Christendom. And yes. And there we go. So it was a new English translation, the authorized English translation. It becomes the King James Version sometime in the 1700s. But until then, it was the authorized Bible
version.
The authorized version, meant to conform really much more closely to ecclesiastical standards that James had set down and reinforce the belief in the infallibility of the Protestant church and of the clergy.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, what is it? The whole lean not on your own understanding thing. It's like, just listen to what the person doing this whole thing tells you. Sure, you can read the Bible for yourself, but the Bible's just telling you to listen to your priest.
Yeah.
Or your king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do the you can do it, but you can read the Bible, but you know, you can't read Latin, so that's the Catholics out. And actually we don't want you reading this Protestant Puritan version, because, you know, actually kind of sounds slightly kind of secular in some regards. Oliver Cromwell. Charles the First did not live as long as his dad. And it's just, so it's kind of this, oh, they're getting a bit more secular. Let's nip that in the bud. So I know what I'll do, guys. Let's publish our own authorized version that's definitely not Catholic, but definitely not kind of, oh, maybe the king is wrong. So, but if we put it out in English, or English at that time, everyone can read it. And if I'm giving knowledge, biblical knowledge to the masses, aren't I fantastic?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't I grand?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. There's always that angle to it. We are not immune to propaganda.
Yep.
And that was very much part of this whole project. Is, oh, look how good I am. I'm giving the Bible to the masses. I'm giving them an authorized version that's approved by the church that everyone can read. La, la, la. We will all agree and be happy fun times.
Yep.
The trouble is that much like the original compilation of the Bible, this was a book created by committee.
Yes, 47 people.
Oh my God. There's actually, there's a book out called God's Secretaries that goes through, the whole, commissioning and creation of the King James Version of the Bible. It's very fascinating. You can find it various places. It is on Audible if you, prefer your information put into your ears instead of your eyes. I will link it in the show notes. You can go check it out. Highly recommend. I did read some parts of it as like part of my research, and it's just fascinating. I want to get through the whole thing at some point, because I love me some history. But yes, and so it, not just, you know, the fact that it was created by committee and therefore they had to kind of agree on, you know, what they were going to take in versus what they were going to sort of leave out or rework.
Yep.
Was more likely, because this is still the Bible. They can't take too much out. But because it was going to be printed, because it was going to be sort of mass produced, they did have to do things like change words to fit on a line or remove punctuation, which had some pretty interesting effects.
Yeah.
And also just retranslating certain words and getting it wrong because, you know, these men were not all like literary scholars.
Nope.
A lot of them were just politicians.
Yep.
And, well, not all. I mean, there were learned men in the conference, but it's like they set out to create a Bible that was going to please their king first and foremost.
Yeah.
You know, the focus was not on like 1,000,000% accuracy here. Right away, there was criticism, albeit very quietly, because you can't really, you know, go hang on a minute to the king and the church at the same time.
No.
Oof, oof. But it's things like there's a word in Hebrew that means like aurex or like a big giant wild ox, but because of a mistranslation, it's set in the King James Version as a freaking unicorn.
And there was a whole like colored picture of this unicorn.
Oh
well.
Yeah.
So like it was just like, you know, it was just I mean, the King James Bible, it mentions unicorns 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one of them warns about the doom coming to enemies of God Church, and the unicorns shall come down with them, and the bullocks and the bulls, and the land will be soaked with their blood. And you're like, okay, so the unicorns are going to get together with a load of bulls and just be like, nope. And clearly, you know,
it meant oxen.
But nope. Yeah. It's the unicorns.
The unicorns, because Scotland.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. So, yeah, which is why it tickles me that there's like biblical literalist movements, which we'll get to in a minute, that are like, you know, well, it's written in the Bible, therefore it's true. And it's like the Bible, the King James Bible says there are unicorns. So, yes. Nate,
and cars are not a thing. So, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yep.
Anyway, one of the other mistranslations, and, you know, of course, James putting his finger in the pie, is that many references to a poisoner or an assassin or a malefactor or a practitioner of taboo practices, whether arcane or simply medical, they're all set down as one word. Witch.
Yes.
Yeah. And that,
Exodus.
Yeah.
22:18.
That is where we get that verse, thou shalt suffer a witch to live. And the original, like, context of that verse did not mean a magical practitioner at all. It specifically referred to a poisoner, particularly someone who makes and distributes poisons for malicious purposes, because that's someone who can like topple a government because they're or a family or a patriarchy or whatever, because they're distributing, you know, poisons. Think like Affair of the Poisons and Lavoisin and the Inheritance Powders, that sort of thing. Thou shalt not suffer someone like that to live. That's what they were talking
Game
about. Not someone
Hashtag
yeah
Joffrey.
They're exactly and they're
spoilers.
Yeah. They're not talking about someone who, you know, dances under the moon and, you know, believes in nature spirits. They're literally talking about someone who makes and distributes poison to kill people. Yep. But because that came down as witch, again, with the, you know, the association at that time between witches and the use of poisons, you know, no one understood fucking nuance.
Yeah.
And of course, because it was like, yeah, this is the approved version and we're going to take it all very literally. Clearly they mean anyone who is suspected of witchcraft by whatever definition we give it, that person should then be executed. And of course, if you take that in conjunction with demonology, it's then quote unquote, very clear to people later on that this is what they are meant to do. And that leads to a whole host of horrible, horrible things, as we well know.
Yep. And also, poisoning was seen as a woman's weapon.
Yes.
You know, women would poison their husbands. So it really does link back to, like, okay, you know, witches, it must be the women who are predominantly more dangerous.
Yeah. And demonology does cite the same sort of rhetoric that we see in the Malleus Maleficarum, that, you know, women are weak-willed and therefore more susceptible to temptation and so forth.
Yes.
And it couldn't just be that women are fucking unhappy because they have a terrible place in society.
History.
No.
Yeah, society. No. It's okay, because, you know, Kramer's just like, all wickedness is but little to the wickedness of women. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, okay. And you know,
tell
like,
us Kramer, you're an incel without telling us you're an incel.
Yeah. Oh man. And Kramer's like, oh, it's okay. Cause crying's just an excuse. Kramer's just like, oh, okay. Women only cry just to deceive men. And you're just like, wow. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're reading demonology and James is like, I'm going to be a bit more gender neutral. You know, there are also men included in this. You know, when King James is just like, maybe we should ease up on the women hating, that you think that it's just like, oh God. Yep.
Yeah. When King James is telling you, you need to ease up on hating women. It's like, oof, dude.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but that, that, brings us to something I discovered during my research, something I'd sort of heard of before, like tangentially, the King James only movement.
The listeners can't hear me grasping my nose. I'm just like pinching the top of my nose going.
Yeah. I read about this and like, I thought it was a more like modern thing, but no, apparently it's been around for ages, mostly like since this thing was frickin' put out.
Yep.
There are people who not only take the Bible literally, but who see the King James Bible as the definitive version of the Bible. And, you know, this is the greatest English translation ever produced. It doesn't need improvements. It doesn't need to be re-examined. It doesn't need additional context. It doesn't need additional research. It is perfect the way it is. Anything that has come after is corrupt and valueless and should be discounted, you know, not
the
King, you know,
James
accounting
version
for any sort of
unicorns and giants.
Yeah, not it. Accounting for the fact that there could be human error or an agenda or, you know, that times change. These are the people who are like, yes, the Bible is literal. We don't need to improve upon it. And also, you know, these are the folks who are like, if it's not in the Bible, it doesn't exist.
But there was a typo in one of the versions, the Wicked Bible, which was a printing error.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, thou shalt commit adultery instead of thou shalt not commit adultery.
Whoopsie!
And that was like 1,000 copies of that went out.
Uh-huh.
So how does that work? Because giants and unicorns don't exist.
Exactly.
And there was a typo even in the 1600s. So,
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, to the surprise of absolutely no one, this is something that you will see a lot in conservative Christian movements.
Yes. Oh, yep.
Shocking. Yeah, but this has been around since the 1800s, at the very least. You know, there were people who were like praising the King James version of the Bible as like the definitive Bible when it came out. But yeah, like starting in like the 1800s, there were definite movements to say, you know, this is the only version of the Bible. These later translations are corrupt and they're espousing all these modern things. And no, this one was perfect. We don't need to change it. And it's just, it makes me laugh, but also gives me a headache.
Yeah.
Because it's like, considering how recently it was written, all of the errors in translation, the fact that it was assembled and translated by committee, the clear prejudices of the committee and the man whose name it bears, it's like, it's just...
But do they not wear t-shirts? Because I'm thinking, like, Leviticus is against mixed fabrics.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Just the idea of biblical infallibility is just foolish on its face to begin with, to me. You know, if it's written in the Bible, it's literally true. There's no room for interpretation, no consideration for differences in language or culture, no accounting for, you know, passage of time or changing views on society. And the parallel belief that if it's not written in the Bible, it doesn't exist. It's all just, it's stupid. let's not mince words. It's stupid.
Because I'm sorry, Brie. I'm just so shocked by this. I just keep like,
yeah,
you don't wear t-shirts and you don't drive a car.
God,
but guns weren't in the Bible either.
Exactly. Freaking exactly. The texts included in the Bible were written centuries ago. Many of them that were considered were excluded, and they're now, you know, Apocrypha or the Gnostic Gospels or what have you. And it was never meant to be a comprehensive tome that included the sum of all knowledge. It was just supposed to be like the tenets of one church. And I mean, no matter what faith or belief system you have or don't have, basing your entire system of morality and understanding on the world on one single document is never a good idea.
No. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it does not matter what faith it is. You know, I'm looking at you, certain pagan types. I'm not. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm not that. Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah.
Glass houses, yeah. Stones. You know, we're not just picking. We're definitely not picking on this because, you know, we it happens in our own camp.
It does. It
Gosh
does,
darn
and it is
and,
something yeah. that should be equally yep. as fervently discouraged in yep. witchcraft and pagan circles. It's yep. like, look, do not put all of those knowledge eggs into one basket. You right. have to look at other stuff. You have to yep. understand context and yep. allow for changing viewpoints and yep. such. So, but yes, for a lot of people, even if they don't believe in biblical infallibility, the King James Version of the Bible is the definitive text for a lot of people.
Yep.
And, you know, for better or for worse, it has influenced several centuries worth of, you know, Christian belief, biblical discussion, and also beliefs about Christianity coming from yep. outside the faith. Again, for better or for worse. So that's that.
My mind has just been blown at this last revelation. I'm just like,
I know.
Sorry, everybody's just sorry. The poor listeners are just like, you heard it here first.
Mm-hmm.
I actually lost the ability to talk there, guys. I just lost the words. And that never happens. I always have something to say. And I just...
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I just...
Yeah. The stupid. It burns. People. I know. Yeah. So anyway, that's mostly that on King Jimmy. He was also involved in some other stuff that had to do with, you know... Of course, the gunpowder treason and plot and the whole Jacobean thing. But again, that's all sort of separate from that. That's all politics, and we're allergic yep. to politics here. So we'll provide sources in the show notes if you want to go and read further about the life of King James and all of the other stuff that he got involved in. He was a very busy man. Very, very busy man. A lot happened during his reign. Whether he was involved in it or not, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that happened in that period of history, and it's quite interesting. And he reigned for almost 58 years.
Yep.
If we count the beginning of his reign as King of Scotland all the way yep. until his death in 1625, I think it was. So he had quite a long tenure, got a lot done, succeeded by Charles I?
Yeah, Charles I.
Charles I.
Yeah,
who met rather a sticky end.
Yes. Oliver Cromwell was just like,
fucking Cromwell.
And then he was just like, and then all this stuff happened, and then Hopkins happened in the middle, and then there was a civil war, and then they were like, I know we overthrew the kingship, but, you know.
Kind of want it back.
Charles 2.0, can we have you back again, please? And he was like, yeah, sure. This is fine.
I'm the king who brought back partying.
Yes.
And spaniels.
I'm the one, yeah. Christmas!
Christmas, yes.
Drinking, yeah. It's like,
woo! Oh.
Yeah, don't like, yeah. It's just like, yeah, boo, no king. Sorry, no Christmas, no drinking. What? No, where's the king? Quick.
Yep.
Excuse me, do you not know that we're in England, mate? Like, I think.
Call off Christmas.
Like, we love Christmas and drinking. That's our thing. Like, mm-hmm. You can't get rid of that. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Executing people willy-nilly, that's fine. We'll accept that. You came for our Christmas and our binge drinking culture. No.
Stupid man.
Stupid man. Jog on.
But yes, that's a completely other topic, but you know, wholesale, fuck Oliver Cromwell. But yes, that's the story of King Jimmy, the godliest boy who ever godly boyed.
And of course, the manliest man who ever manly man.
yes. And kissed lots of boys, allegedly.
Treason.
But we will talk about, we will list things in the show notes for you to read, if you wish for the reading on any topics we have covered. And thank you for coming with us on this journey. Not sure what we're doing next time. It's Lozzie's pick next time. So I am waiting with bated breath to see what you have chosen. And it should be very interesting, but we'll be back.
Exciting.
Yee! We'll be back very soon with another episode of the Stardust Session. So until then, thank you for joining us and stay loosey goosey.
Honk.
Yay. Hex Positive is a proud member of the Nerd and Tie Podcast Network. Check out everything they have to offer, including our sibling podcast, BS Free Witchcraft, over at nerdandtie.com. Intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. For all the latest updates, follow @hex_podcast on Twitter. You can also follow me at Brina Garin on Twitter and Instagram. For more information on my books, you can check out my WordPress and my Amazon author page. And if you'd like to support the show, please visit patreon.com/BrinaGarin. Stay safe, wash your hands, and remember, always practice safe hex. Hex Positive is a proud member of the Nerd and Tie Podcast Network. Check out everything they have to offer, including our sibling podcast, BS Free Witchcraft, over at nerdandtie.com. Intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. For all the latest updates, follow @hex_podcast on Twitter. You can also follow me at Brina Garin on Twitter and Instagram. For more information on my books, you can check out my WordPress and my Amazon author page. And if you'd like to support the show, please visit patreon.com/BrinaGarin. Stay safe, wash your hands, and remember, always practice safe hex.